Blind Cool Tech number 33, July 6, 2005. Hi, I'm your host Larry Skukon. Got an interesting show for you today. We're in a meeting at the NFB convention called Everything Digital with the National Library Service. Kurt Selke and Michael Katzman, I believe is his name, are going to be answering questions from the audience about digital talking books. And I should point out, while we're waiting for this meeting to get started, that I gave you the wrong FTP address on the audio part of, I think it was show 31. It's actually vct@skular.onlinestoragesolutions.com, all one word. I had said online.storage.solutions, but it's not. It's vct@skular.onlinestoragesolutions.com.
In my jurisdiction, right. And I'm looking forward to going.
Anyway, though, I'm Kurt Selke, and the fellows who have just come in are Lloyd Rasmussen, who's an engineer with us and has been for years, loyal NFB member for years and years and years with his
40.
Wife, Judy. 40?
40.
You're not even 40 years old, Lloyd. I remember when you came to the program here. And Michael Katzman, who is our chief engineer. So with that, what we do at these NFB conventions is just have the room here, and we stay, and if there are questions, people come and speak to us. And sometimes I've had a diabetic attack because it went on forever. A couple of years, nobody came. I'm very encouraged that there were three or four of you here. And who was the lady sitting there with an open mouth wonderment at my remarks? Would you like to ask a question?
No, I'm waiting for my husband who wants to ask you questions.
Oh, all right, that's good. I thought you were going to say you just wandered in and you didn't know what the program was.
I don't want any difficult questions from this guy here.
I do have one difficult question for you.
We won't answer it probably.
Probably not.
Somebody at another conference, and I won't say where or when.
How you doing, Michael?
Not too long ago, like yesterday, there was a question and said, what is the female involvement in the design of the talking book machine?
That's an important
question. Well, my answer, you won't like the answer. But the answer was, there's a chap up in Massachusetts that got himself into a great deal of trouble, the president of Harvard, answering questions like that, and I refuse to let Michael respond to it. But there are women who are involved in the process. Is your question more difficult than that?
No, much, much more simple than that.
Okay.
And this may be a little bit too techy for the rest of the audience,
well,
if it is.
Turn it over to these two guys.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I work for APH, as Michael and Lloyd know.
Right. I do too.
No, we work for you. And we're very interested in making sure we're on board with a machine that'll play the new digital talking books when they're ready. So we're very, very anxious to get final specifications for the size of the cartridge and the connector. And I guess my question is, do you have a good idea of when that decision will be finalized?
In the near future, let me put it that way. And let me speak just generally, and I think the audience, I'm going to give you a dummy cartridge, okay?
Okay.
No, seriously. It'll approximate what you have in your hand. It will not be exactly that way, but it will approximate that.
Okay.
We signed the contract with Battelle, and who then subcontracted with HumanWare, with Gilles Papab in Canada, with Trace out in University of Wisconsin, and with the NFB. And the project is well underway. As a matter of fact, on Monday, we will be in Columbus, Ohio, looking at models of five different suggestions for talking book machines. And so forth. The book will approximate what you have in your hand, and I'll be delighted to hand it around to others.
Can I just pass it around?
But it will be about, what would you say, 8 months away, something like that, or Michael? I've forgotten the exact.
First prototypes are March of 2006, but obviously the specification or specifications will be written well before that. So in the fall, we'll have good information. And we've been fighting potential manufacturers to look at some of the early ideas we have to aid in design for manufacturability. So devices can be manufactured.
We want to do it as soon as we can, but we can't. You know, the problem is that there's a design phase and it's going there. But as soon as we can, we've got to get it to you.
Yeah.
Because not only does ATH, but talking book publishers with AFB have to know what the, and so forth.
Yeah.
Now that's it sounds like obfuscation, but it's it's not. As Rudy pointed out when I made a remark, I'm glad somebody listened to it. I said they enervated me instead of energized me.
I noticed that.
Yes, I was going to say anybody who had a head did except me who said it, then I obviously didn't have a head. Are there any other questions?
Silky and Michael. I have two.
Sure.
I originally had one, but something happened while I was here that causes me to ask a second.
Sure.
Let's start with the second question. We were able, and did win a Victor Bride the other day.
Yep.
So what I want to know is, the player that you guys will be getting together, the books you'll be getting going with, will they have the capability to play on any other player, or will they only play on a Library of Congress player, and will we run into the problem if we buy other types of books, with, like Daisy, for example, we'd have to have different equipment to play that equipment.
Well, let me give you an answer, then let me have Michael give you an answer. I'll give you the layman's answer. The machine that we're designing will be unique to the Library of Congress. We expect, however, that there will be machines that will play the flash cards or the flash cartridges that will come in the aftermarket, as they did with the four-track half-speed cassettes, okay? But it's a digital program, and we're going to give you an online access to the books, as Michael pointed out. That should come in 2007, and then you can bring it down, and if you have to, I'll let you go about what he has to have. But
for the downloading of the books, you're either going to need a software player like the VictorSoft player, or play to download the books. The books will be in a standard NISO format, so there shouldn't be any problems in.
My last question, real quick, is not too much about digital, but it's about the magazines. I get Sports Illustrated right now, and I'm noticing the trend has been that on the weekly issues, when they come up with the weekly issues for the basketball and football preview schedule, particularly on the college level, I don't generally get those issues, and I just wondered if you can talk about why that has been happening.
God doesn't like you, I guess. I don't know.
No,
are you the guy that came to the booth about this the other day?
Yeah, I am.
Uh-huh. What's the answer?
Well, Judy's answer was that it was a contracting matter that we don't do. We contract to do weekly issues and
right.
A few specials.
Oh, is this a special issue?
Mess up the system.
What's so funny. It's usually in a weekly, usually they're a part of a weekly issue. They're longer for the particular week. I've been getting them most recently, but the past couple of years, or at least last year, I didn't get college basketball and football at all.
Let me look into it, because if it's in the standard weekly magazine,
yeah.
You should get it.
Okay.
If it's a special, you would not get it.
It's my knowledge, it isn't a special, because we've gotten the previews for a lot of the pro, the NBA and all that.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll look into it and I'll see what's wrong. I can't answer the question.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Can you reiterate or repeat what you... I guess you mentioned something about online access during the general session for those of us that didn't make it to that.
Let me babble a bit and then turn it over to Michael. We've had a very limited pilot with 50 participants with three magazines, audio magazines.
Which APH has participated in.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think we're doing two of them.
And that's going to be expanded. The fellow on our staff's name is Neil Bernstein. And he's going to expand it to, 20 magazines, Michael, 200 books, and then eventually in 2007, the whole collection will be available. Not the whole analog collection, but the whole digital collection that we have will be available.
And that'll still just be a pilot, or will that be available to all the patrons?
In 2007, that will be full download.
Wow, that's exciting.
It is exciting. I thought...
Now, as I was saying in the talk, because... We need that infrastructure before we can actually start producing books, that'll be available, say, before the books are actually produced.
And we also would need to have a pretty good understanding of what we have to deal with technical support for all those users.
Yeah.
And what the hardware requirements
I heard
will actually
a few,
be.
I heard a few claps there, and I thought there should have been more, because that is a big...
Well, that's... that's...
But I'm saying, I don't know that the audience fully understood the impact of what Michael said. Yes?
What's the... In terms of recording older tapes, whatever, retrospectively, how far...
What are we doing with that?
How do you make a decision on what...
Well, it's done both on the quality of the print book, the author, I mean, the quality of the book, as well as the quality of the narrator. And I don't know how long you've been in the program, but one of the major... narrators that we've had is a fellow named Alexander Scorby. And he did the Bible and hundreds of other books. So let me just say, we'll do all of Scorby that we have quality masters and we can do it, all right? But then you would do the standard classics and so forth. The beginning, we put out a plan of what we laid out, the plan of what we did. And I included in there, diabolically, the list of the books that we were going to do in the first year. And the reason for that was we were getting a lot of criticism about what we were doing, why we weren't going to CD and so forth. And I thought I'd divert all the librarians so that they could argue about the titles that we weren't doing, and they'd be diverted from, I'm being very frank with you, be diverted from the actual technical side. But it would be based, you'd do Saroy and you'd do Dickens. I mean, I'm being ridiculous. You'd do Thackeray. But you'd at the same time do the narrators of some of the things that you might not think. So it'd be books of enduring value. We'll end up in 2008 with 20,000 titles, and they're doing about 1,500 to 2,000 of those retrospective a year right now.
I might just say something about that, too.
Yeah.
It's I'm doing quality assurance on a lot of the stuff that's coming through, both new material and old material, making sure that we have a properly built digital talking book as a document, as a set of files. And I'm finding that the converted material is all over the map as far as what the audio quality is. We're going to have to make some decisions, and they've not all been made yet, as to what quality level we should accept in the program before we say this thing is just going to have to be recorded over again, or it's going to spend, it'll cost us $50,000 to convert this book and really upgrade it to something we can use, so we better not do it. It's going to be hard. There's a lot of decisions to be made. A lot of material is being converted now. Way more has to be converted and checked and decisions made as to whether we really accept it.
Yeah, in other words, from a literary and a narrator point of view, they've been selected.
Yeah.
From a quality point of view, there's the problem that he points out.
Well, what happens to a book when it's pulled offline, for example?
When it's done what?
When it's pulled offline. I was looking for example, a book called The Wreck of a Memphis. And I know that it was once part of the NLS system, because I listened to it when I was in high school. Now, it's an adult book. I mean, not adult X-rated, but adult level. Okay, book.
Was it on 16 RPM discs or 8 RPM?
Probably. On one of your discs, yes. And I asked to find it and never...
Where are you from? What's it?
West Virginia. Charleston,
well,
South
we Carolina. Don't. It would be highly unusual to say that we've discarded it. I can't speak to the specific title, but I believe that we probably would have it. I would ask you either, if you didn't get any your satisfaction from West Virginia to get it.
Well, they said they would look for it, but then I never received it.
You never heard?
Were you looking for it as a cassette?
Well, it didn't matter to me.
Okay, before we leave, don't leave before I take your name and so forth. Deborah will take your name, and we'll get back to you definitely, because we would not have discussed, we would not have destroyed the book.
I have a question.
Sure.
I'm Kathy Gilring from Louisiana, and I represent the Louisiana Interagency Task Force on Deaf Blindness.
Right.
We've I'm very hard of hearing, so forgive me if I'm asking something that you covered in the session.
Go ahead.
We are very interested to know if we will be able to read these new digital talking books in Braille.
No.
No?
No.
Are there any modifications that you could make that would make that possible?
There are certainly modifications that could be made. Unfortunately, the decision has been made not to do that. We'll be producing the same number of Braille books that we have produced in the past, and hopefully the budget will permit us to increase that slightly. But there is no plan at this point to put them out.
Are the Braille books comparable to the ones that are on?
Well, you can get the Braille books in two ways. You can get the Braille books in hard copy, in other words, on paper copy, or you can get the Braille books off the web, in the web Braille format.
Is it safe to say that anything available with the talking book is also available in Braille in one of those two fashions?
No.
Say again?
No.
No.
It's not easy to stand here and say that, but I don't want to. I say it's not easy to stand here and say that, but no, the answer is no, it's not. We do have an amplification device that we make, I don't know if you're aware of that we make available to individuals who have that situation and who have a doctor's certificate. And that is available for the talking books to amplify it. To the point that, and I can't talk, you know the spec on that. It would deafen a normally hearing person if played to its full amplification. That's not a technical statement.
What the decibel level is.
Yeah, very, yeah, very.
130.
Is it 130?
Almost 130. For a normal person, 120 is the threshold.
Is that available now with the cassettes? That,
it is, yes. Available now, yes, through your library.
Thank you.
Yes,
continuing on with that, roster of publications that you have under talking books.
Right.
If, for instance, on a Braille note, you said web Braille would be a better way to download digital versions of the
Braille books.
The Braille books. Now, how much correlation is there between the
audio and the Braille?
The talking books.
Very little.
And the web Braille.
Very little. We do about these are very rough figures, but 2,000 titles a year and 400 in Braille. So there's very little.
There's some overlap, but.
But not great. Yes, sir.
This is J.D. Townsend from Florida, and I want to just applaud you for web Braille. I find it an awesome thing. But I was at the meeting yesterday for Bookshare, and I wonder if there's any are there a number of titles that they have available for download is quite large and impressive, and I wonder whether there's any cross-fertilization or communication.
Well, we understand with Bookshare, we cooperate with Bookshare in that we help Bookshare sign people up who are eligible for the program. You know, we have a database of 750,000 people, and we don't make that public, but if the person indicates that they're a user, we validate that, and then they can use Bookshare. But with Bookshare, you understand that the Bookshare is Bookshare, that you or other individuals provide materials to them, and then they provide it out. The quality level is, I don't want to say questionable, because they provide a very good service.
It's not anything year-year quality.
No, I understand that. I'm trying to say that nicely.
Yes.
And which is very unusual for me, but that's, yeah, the answer is the extent of the cooperation is that we find them very friendly, very cooperative, and we have agreed to help them build their participation, and we support them and provide validation of eligibility and so forth.
Is just a follow-up to that, is there a complete directory at some in
of their
some
things
place available of all titles that are available.
No, there isn't, and that's very unfortunate. We, some years ago, approximately 10 years ago, made an offer to put books into our catalog of any books that people would like to provide to us. We called it an international catalog. So we included books from RFB&D. We actually, I take it as a, I'll give myself some credit. RNIB did not, Royal National Institute for the Blind, did not have a catalog. They got their catalog up. We said we'd accept materials in print or any form that they had and included, and that offer still stands. Unfortunately, many people have not taken advantage of it. There was a sporadic effort by Australia and New Zealand, as they say, RNIB. The Swedes wanted to but never provided it to us, but we have a very extensive catalog of Canadian materials, both educational and from the library.
I would love to see that.
Well, people get hooked up with technology. Now they're talking about how can you go online and connect one catalog to another catalog to another catalog. And that's all well and good, but nothing came of it. All they had to do was send it to us, and we put it in. And
the other thing we've done, too, is we have cooperating libraries, as you know, because you receive your services from Florida. And Florida is actively submitting titles for WebRail.
Yes.
So, and I know Iowa is...
Yeah, there's a few.
There's a few libraries that are Massachusetts that are submitting WebRail titles as well as their audio titles, and those are also included in the catalog.
Any other questions? Yes, sir. Yes.
Me?
Yes.
Why? I don't know whether it's been mentioned. I just came in, but the other morning. I was working at the Asian Appliances, and I was working with the cassette players.
Right.
There were three of us. We all agreed the cassette players were dinosaurs.
That's right, they are.
But then we got talking about the digital systems now.
Right.
And that there was a concern that whether, at least in my mind, that the Library of Congress, Blind Division, come up with a digital system,
mm-hmm.
and we're almost going into another level of digital design.
Yes.
Relative to the whole issue of technology, and wondering, I'm just kind of wondering whether or not that we're kind of late in the game, or whether
you're late in the game. Is that what you're saying? Late.
Late in the game.
No, I don't think so.
No.
When we create a digital book, that digital book can be put out in various, I'm going to use the wrong words because I'm not an engineer, but various formats, if you will. You can have a CD book or a DVD book. We have chosen to go to the flash memory, and I believe that will be the four. In the future, in the immediate future, not forever, because everything changes, but we believe that will be the format of the future. We are the only people that will be putting books on a flash memory device, but I believe you'll find them in automobiles and right straight across the horizon because of the smallness, the fact that everything can be kept on one media piece, and I wake up at night sometimes worrying about that, and my wife has been driven crazy by me because I didn't invent it, and I'm not a technician, but you're either talking to a very far-sighted, thoughtful, brilliant person who's revolutionized the blind world, or you're talking to the greatest idiot in the world, and I don't know which that will be. That'll be your determination, but I believe that you'll find that the books will be fine, that they'll all be kept on a cartridge. I'm going to hand you the cartridge. The mock-up of the cartridge. I believe that you'll find the industry will follow us, and I believe that in the near future, in the mid future, that is the technology that will be there.
In a certain way, we've abstracted the media from the player, because if you feel that cartridge has a USB connector on it, so. The interface between the medium and the player is just a USB connection. So flash memory is just one form of the book. It could
be
ham sandwiches. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be that flash memory. So in a way, we future-proofed ourselves. That so whatever
comes along,
we can just modify it, and the players will still play.
So it slips into a USB port.
Yes,
that's right.
That's wonderful.
But it is.
You see the thing that the cap in front of you has that you'll end up having.
But it is a USB port that's kind of blocked up. It won't just slip into your computer's USB port without some help.
It takes a special cable the way that it's set up, you couldn't just pop it into the.
We don't want it to be.
There's a reason why we're doing it that way. Is if you looked at this device, thought, well, I could use this to record my programs on it. So trying to at least flag it to so that people aren't stealing.
I see.
But electrically, it's a USB connection.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if this was an industry standard flash device.
Yes, it would be industry standard. You won't get a right to it, but
it's an industry standard readable.
The flash is, but not the cartridge.
The physicals of the cartridge are unique. Electrically,
it appears to the computer as a standard flash.
That's correct.
Read-only stack flash.
That's correct.
What is that thing?
Concerning that,
it's a book.
When we're able to, as you were saying today in the meeting, download these off the internet, will the cards like this be available for us to purchase that are rewritable so we can download onto a card like this?
We believe that other manufacturers will make writable cartridges available so that, yes, you could download the book, transfer it onto a card, and take the portable player with you and play them. We think other people will be making players who will play our books
On a PC, or on a laptop, or whatever, PDA of some kind. That would be a lot of possibilities.
That would be lovely to just be able to download an audio book and then slip it onto a card like that, plug it into it.
Now, there's digital rights management involved because we're not providing talking books for the general population. It's only for our eligible users, so you'll need a key to be able to play our books on these other players.
Can you talk about how that's going to work?
When it's been worked out, we'll let you know.
That's being formulated at the moment.
How much of a book can go on those?
A whole book. 90. We figure that 95% of the 95% of the books that we produce will fit on that one on one card.
Yeah, the Bible probably won't.
Yes.
There's a question here.
Again, forgive me if I covered something that I missed. Will the machine, if you will, be a standalone lightweight that we can carry to read on the bus?
Yes. Yes. That's our aim. That's our aim. And as I say, on Monday you see the first designs.
So how many megabytes are we
looking for testers?
We're looking at around 256
megs. Testers are looking for us, and if you'd like to do that, contact Judy Dixon at NLS and put your name on the list.
There's no prototype yet?
No.
No prototype yet.
No prototype of the machine?
No.
It will be in the near future, but not yet.
So how will that relate to the use of the Victor?
I can't hear you.
How does that relate to the current use of the Victor Reader?
Well, the Victor Reader plays a CD.
Yeah.
This is not a CD.
No. But wasn't that part of the...
Victor is contracted with Battelle to be subcontracted with Battelle. They are designing the interior of the machine. If you want to,
that's right. And the software.
The things that they are learning,
right,
in doing CDs are going to help us to build a better product.
Yeah.
Along with all the research that we're doing.
So we take everything that they've learned, building their own players, comes into our player set.
With regard to the digital download deal, I know, I'm sure y'all are going to build a wonderful player. However, sometimes there's this whole issue of not wanting to carry a whole bunch of devices around. So if we have another device like a Braille Note or what have you, will we be able to download these files and transfer it to something like that?
there will have to be a way. I know that many of these devices are already developing different kinds of Daisy players,
yeah.
Daisy audio players. The trick will be making sure that there's a way to get the digital rights management to work.
Sure.
With whatever organizations you're getting your books from, whether it's us or RFP&D, and how do we get these materials in, not just get the files, but get them readable.
Right.
That's all, it's, I think, our intention to make sure that there's a way to do that.
Sure, well, I mean, just as an example, on Bookshare, you download the thing, you unpack it, and then you can transfer it. So, I don't know if that's possible.
Well, this is key. Can I interject a little bit here?
Sure.
The digital rights management is currently being worked on by a group with NLS and Daisy Consortium.
That's correct. Neil Bernstein is
there. If it is going to be an open specification, so anyone who develops a reading system will be able to incorporate that DRM into their reading system.
Oh, I see.
And they will have to do that, and they will have to have some kind of a certification, actually a digital certificate. In most likely, anyway, you'll have to have a digital certificate in order to be authorized to play the protected books. But any developer of a reading system, let's say the Braille Note, if they wanted to put a reading system on the Braille Note that supported DRM, they would be able to do that and would have the potential of being able to play NLS's books that are protected using the digital rights management system or anybody else's books that use that system.
That's correct.
So it'll be up to the developers of the reading systems to determine whether or not they intend to support the DRM. Hopefully most of them will.
Whether they want to retrofit.
I saw the chart. What's the alternative to the card?
Well, y'all are such a major provider.
Excuse me, I didn't hear the question.
I saw the card.
Yeah.
What's the alternative to the card?
What do you mean the alternative?
I thought you were mentioning two products earlier.
Downloading materials versus having a cartridge, having them on a cartridge.
Are there any other questions?
Yes, I do. I really enjoy WebRail very much, and I use it a great deal, but I also still like the hard copy Braille.
There's no intention of doing away with the hard copy.
Good. I was concerned that...
No, there's no there's no intention at this point of doing that.
Well, that's good, because I really still enjoy the hard copy.
In other words, you'll get the paper copy
Braille.
As well as the other.
And then with the catalogs that you were mentioning that you incorporated.
It's our online catalog that you can get through our website.
Right. Yeah. But does that mean also, for example, if I call my librarian up and I say, what do you have in, let's say, ancient Sumerian history,
right,
or whatever I might want them, they could look through their catalogs and go through the...
They would look at the same they would look at the same catalog that you could look at, or you could look at the same catalog that they could look at.
Okay.
It's a master catalog which holds not only NLS stuff. I mentioned this stuff from RFP&D Canada, both the educational as well as the CNIB, and a few scattered things from other places in the world.
Yeah. And I know that the JBI also gave their collection or a good
that's
deal
correct.
Of their book. Is that's not incorporated also?
That will all be in the catalog. What isn't there is being put there. When she's talking about is the Jewish Braille Institute.
Right.
Gave us their Braille collection was somewhat controversial, but because some of the people thought that it would disappear, but it's not disappearing, it's being put into our multi-state center, and everything that goes in there is being put into our catalog. The Jewish Guild for the Blind gave us a fantastic one copy collection of stuff maybe 10 years ago when we did a similar thing with that.
Are they flagged in some way so that we can...
Well, all the books have full cataloging. So, you get not only do you get the author title, but you get the publisher and the manufacturer and so forth and so on. So, yes, you can identify it.
And they do have an acronym at the beginning of the Braille number.
Yeah,
which uniquely identifies where it comes from.
So, with the transferring what's already said in library to the new digital or
right,
whatever.
The 1,500 books a year or whatever, yeah.
Okay. Do y'all subcontract that out to individuals?
We don't do anything in-house except Lloyd spends 24 hours a day proofing what we get, but it's all contract
to
our
work. It's not to individuals, though. It's to contractors who bid to produce X number of books.
Machine, who contractors that have open reel equipment, because we're working with 4-track and half-track, 3¾ IPS master tapes, and who have then audio processing equipment, they can measure levels, they can check timing, they can determine the times at which index tones turn occurred, or do other things to try to get some navigation to some of these books. And but it's not being done by individuals, and at this time, that's not really contemplated. Some people have talked about that in the past, that there might be something that would need to be done, but that would also be very hard to manage, and at this point, it's hard for us to manage what we do have.
Maintain the quality.
So is there a company to contact that?
What do you mean?
Companies to contact?
Well, what, for what purpose?
Well, I'm setting up a digital studio at home. I'm a professional musician. My wife is a radio host in Atlanta, and we're looking at the process of, you know, is there local books to a local college that is in need? Is there, what is the need? Is there something that we can do? I'm losing my vision now, so all this is new to me. And
I would say offline. I mean, after this meeting, get together with Michael Kasman. He can put you, he and Lloyd can put you together with Billy West and others that talk to you about how to build a studio and so forth. We do that for the regional libraries. We'd be delighted to help you.
The regional libraries probably have
And you may want to contact the regional library in Atlanta.
Right. Well, at this moment, they just have a new, they just lost their librarian.
Right, she's leaving at the end of the month. So
it's,
not an ideal time. It's not an ideal time.
Yeah. So the agency Recording for the Blind, they wouldn't assume the record?
We have a very close cooperation with Recording for the Blind. As a matter of fact, John Kelly and I were just chatting earlier this morning. Yes, let's say. Very close, and they are the last. There was a meeting at NLS, and I want to phrase this properly. They indicated that that when our machine came up, that they would make their books available in a flash format.
No,
I don't want to commit them to anything more than that.
Is this format going to be cheaper than using the tapes?
For us to produce it?
One place is on a large scale, yes.
No, probably not. No, it would be better.
Better, but
won't be cheaper.
And how will we in 08 be asked to turn in our equipment and get a replacement?
You won't.
Okay.
And the reason for that is it's anticipated that some people will not wish to have a digital machine. Right. That was our experience when we went to cassette. There's an anticipation some people want one like you do, but in order to access the catalog that you have there of the 400,000 titles, 23 million copies, you have to have a cassette machine because we won't be able to convert everything.
Right.
So there's no intention of taking that cassette machine away from you. It's indeed, Michael Katzman's making plans of how does he get enough parts and so forth to maintain those machines for a period of time into the future until it's, you know, unnecessary.
Does your website have information on this technology?
Yes.
Yes, it does. Okay. It has our strategic plan. It has various press releases that have come out. It has various announcements, and I would urge you to do that. We're also recently started incorporating, we put out a monthly newsletter called Flash, and we've sent that to the regional libraries, the sub-regional libraries, and we're also putting that in talking book topics of Braille book review. But bear in mind that they don't come out every month, so that there's a lag there, but it's there also.
And I think it's excerpted a little bit, so if you want the whole Flash newsletter, when it comes out, go to the NLS website.
Go to the website and it's there.
Okay. What is the NLS website?
www.loc.gov/NLS. Now, exactly where to look, I think Flash is under the newsletters section on the site, if I remember correctly.
So www.loc.gov/NLS.
And if you get one of our What's New brochures down at the exhibit hall in Braille or large print, that address is all over that publication too.
loc.gov/NLS.
Do you have, besides audio books, do you have any in the Tektronix like music or anything?
You have a very large music collection. I think we have the largest music collection for the blind in the world, actually. The scores, et cetera, et cetera. We have it in Braille. We have it in what we call bold note, which is large type. And I would urge you to call John Hansen. Let me give you my card. And then the chap's name is John Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N. Who's it? Our music librarian.
It's an instructional collection and scores collection. They're not a music.
It's not music itself.
Yeah.
But thank
you. Who still has the flash card?
I have it in my pocket.
Oh, I've heard of my
okay. You know, I don't want to lose it. Michael Moody might kill me if I. Yes.
This is JD again. And
yeah.
And this is off the technology subject, and I have never been really clear about how the selection how selections are made for inclusion or exclusion from the collection.
Okay, it's a multi-part situation. We have many advisory groups. Okay, and we do have a collection development advisory group, which is made up of librarians. We have arbitrarily divided the country up into four places, okay? So there's a librarian from each area, there is a user from each area, and then there's a representative from the National Federation of the Blind, American Council of the Blind, and the Blind and Veterans Association. They meet once a year to give general direction as to emphasis in science, you know, whatever, okay? Then the collection itself is built by a group of librarians, I think the section is about five people, at NLS. And there are some guidelines. We do 50% current, 50% retrospective. So just, you know, you do the latest Tom Wolfe novel, the one about the campus, which is being blasted, but it's a bestseller, and you do Dickens at the same time, okay? So you end up 50-50. All the bestseller lists, the LA Times, the New York Times, the Washington Post book section, every book on there that's doable is done. There are some books, and I'm not being facetious, like All You Want to Know About George W. Bush, and it's a blank pages. You don't do that. I can't do that with sense, you know? You got to know your audience. Or the Garfield comic books. We can't do those, all right? But other than that, and then they go into each book, theoretically, has to have at least three reviews. That doesn't have to mean that they are positive, you know, absolutely this is the best book in the world, but it has to be recognized, and we strictly avoid vanity publishers. The only exception to that rule would be NFB and ACB. We do publish books that they produce. And that's called vanity publishers, meaning they publish it themselves rather than another. And the collection develops. There was a young lady here to make me feel good, a librarian who said that she looked at the collection and thought it was good. We've made a specific effort to build a high-quality, balanced collection of materials within the limits of 2,000 titles a year that we can do that would be like a small public library.
I'm a librarian by history myself, and I do applaud the collection, and I especially am appreciative that half the titles are retrospective titles, and that it's not just a current catalog of bestsellers. But there are a lot of
books that you want, you can't.
There are a ton of books and a ton of magazines that would be wonderful, and I wonder if there's any hope of expanding, especially the magazine collection.
Maybe perhaps in the future. I'm trying to think of the figures. There are like 40,000 books, titles a year, new, something like that, that come out. You can only do a fraction. And in magazines, there's like 40, 50,000 titles.
Yeah.
And yes, we only do 40, roughly, or, you know, 38 or whatever, in audio and a similar number in Braille. We have had focus groups, and the titles have come down that way. In the future, there may be possibility of expanding it, but not in the immediate future. Unfortunately, from that perspective, the monies in the immediate future are going to be directed toward building the talking book machine and the digital book. That's not a very happy answer, but that's the answer. Behind you, sir.
No. Right here?
Yes.
It's Chad Allen. Hello, Dr. Silky.
Hello.
How are you? I was wondering if Floyd Matson's new book is being considered for an LS.
Floyd Matson's new book has been done in hardback, paperback, leather. Don't ask for the leather. That's special, guys. I don't know what you're getting. Leather, braille, and an audio. There should be copies. I haven't been. I just arrived like yesterday. But there should be copies here in braille and audio for sale.
Oh, okay.
And
there are in audio.
What?
There are in audio. We don't have any in braille.
Okay.
Here.
Well, the braille was done. I know. I checked.
Yeah.
But
and I checked the DTV last week also.
Yeah. In other words, they what we did was put it into the collection so that anybody can borrow it, and you the NFB have purchased additional copies, thousands of copies of the audio, and hundreds of copies, if not thousands of copies, of the braille. So it's already done.
Okay. Thank you.
And that's a, well, excuse me, that's an example of an extreme vanity publisher. We publish it ourselves. Yes. Yes, sir.
Is it my turn?
Yes.
Is there any way that a very, very small publication could be done by NLS? For example, we have a group of piano tuners. We have an annual magazine, but it only goes to maybe 75 people.
Get a hold of me. I mean, I'll give you my card and you write to me. When you're talking about a thing like that without going into great detail, I mean, obviously, that's a major interest in the blind community. I wasn't aware that the journal existed. We ought to be able to do something that's possible.
Yeah. Dr. Silky, I've spoken before, but I did want to make a comment to the collection. With regard to the current books, you guys do a pretty good job of accessing not only the bestsellers, but you know the current books that are sort of critically acclaimed, or at least like you said, being talked about. So I appreciate that, and I hope that'll continue.
Oh, I hope so too. Yes, Miss.
Also, are you continuing to do the Braille certification?
Yes. No, I understand that. I'm trying to think of what to say. I'm not known for my diplomatic presentation, so I'm trying to frame this in the correct way. We've had an extreme problem in the area of Braille in recent years and in the certification area. We're addressing that. The person who headed that section for the last few years is no longer with us. I haven't made this a public announcement yet, but it was announced to the staff last week. Judy Dixon will be taking over an acting responsibility, and it's in every intention in the future to have her on a fully permanent basis there. And we intend to continue being the certifying agency. However, we intend to possibly arrange with another organization, you probably know that organization, to coordinate the actual correcting of the tests and so forth. You may even be a member of that organization. Yes. Any other? Are there any other questions?
Yes, sir. I have a lot. In the crime and the science fiction, and there are a couple of others. There are a lot of.
You're talking about mysteries or real life crime?
Well, not only real life, but in fiction, there are organizations like Crippen and Landrieu, whose sole purpose is to publish, mystery novels, science fiction. I don't know who all they are, but I do know they exist. Do you plan to do some of those that are going to be published by these more specialized houses, for example, the works by Doug Allen or Edward D. Hulk are ones that are immediately caught.
I cannot speak to specific titles because I read English mysteries that take place in boarding schools and universities. But beyond that, I don't. So I don't know the titles. But I would say again, what we do is we try to do the ones that are receive some critical attention and critical acclaim, rather than than the.
Well, I know you do major publishers.
Yeah.
But here again, these are
these are people who are have a certain amount of respect in their field, but they publish specialty titles. And here again,
I can say we can look into it, and that, and you probably understand what I mean when I say that.
Okay. And let me ask you one more. There are certain things, books. I have a number. Before I forget, I want to thank you for publishing, for making several books on the Black Dahlia case available.
Yeah, I remember that.
I have, this has opened up some interesting speculation and reading, and my wife is not so happy about it, but still.
Well, I've been avoiding you for the last few years, you know. I was kind of suspicious of you myself.
But also, here again, there are certain literary characters who have had more than one book written about them. For example, Scarlet Pimpernel. Well, I know you got the first one.
Right.
But there are, you know, you want to know, because of the fact that references have been made in movies, you want to know what happened to the guy. I mean, you know, the average sighted guy might know, but here again, was he ever caught? Was he ever killed? What were the circumstances in which his wife accidentally let Citizen Chauvelin know that poor old Percy was the Scarlet Pimpernel? In other words, when sighted people mention these references, I go, hey, what? Come again? And I'm wondering if any more.
If I figure out what happened to the Scarlet Pimpernel, you'll be the first to know.
Yeah, but the first one is there, but as for the rest of them, nothing.
Okay. No, thanks. I appreciate you coming. Yes, miss.
Will you pass around the new medium, the futuristic medium? Never got that.
Oh, I have it. I have it again in my. I keep an eye on all you guys. I'm just walking away with it. I'll give it to you.
It doesn't work.
Yeah. No, it's just a wooden mock-up. Yes, are there any other questions? Yes.
It was mentioned made to the downloadable talking book magazines.
Right. Well, Michael Katzman can address that.
How does that work as far as have access to the internet, PC, and downloadable
I can tell you a little about that. There's two sets of download. There's one set of downloadable magazines already available. That's all of our Braille magazines, or practically all of them. Those are available through the Web Braille system and in a Braille format. And that system is up and running, and it's complete, and it's available to all users who are Web Braille users now. And anybody that wants to can talk to their regional library about getting a username and a password to work with WebRaille. Then from there, they can, if they're already using the program and eligible for it, and have some way of reading Braille files. Now, what we're starting on, well, we've had a pilot project going with three of our audio magazines, is to have those available for download to about 50 users right now. And those are big. They're U.S. News issue might be 100 megabytes long, and some of the other ones are a little smaller. Smart Computing is sometimes 150 megabytes long. But that system is working for about 50 test users now, and we do have plans to expand it. And Neil Bernstein is the guy that's working on how that will work. But there's no... I don't have an exact schedule for when we'll do that or how many magazines will be added. But
well, what
do
we say, 200 books and what, about 40? I mean,
whatever audio magazines we are doing, we're probably not going to do new audio magazines just for download. It'll be the same things that are available on cassette now would be available as a download when this thing gets up to full production.
The books are downloaded, they're uncompressed, and then you read it with a... Player.
Is that going to be the standard for magazine subscriptions? Because it seems to me like, or if
guys actually going to
in the beginning? In the beginning, we'll have the digital books on the flash cartridge, and we'll keep the magazines on the cassette.
Oh, okay.
However, the download you can get them in that form.
That may be the last thing that goes off cassette, just as magazines were the last thing to go off a flexible disc.
That's true. And for cost reasons, for different cost reasons.
Have you done any? I'm not sure you have. What are you thinking about compressing these files and then having a way to uncompress them at the other end to make downloading faster?
Again, Michael, would you?
Are they going to be MP3?
Well, they're already. I mean, they're already compressed. The only reason that we have them, you know, a zip file at the moment is just convenience. You download one file rather than downloading a lot of files to make up the DTV. But the audio files are at the moment MP3 compressed. Whether or not the final for debate, but they're in a format that's optimal for download at the moment. So download even 100 or 150 megabytes is the actual compressed most efficient way to download at the moment.
Jeepers.
Yeah.
Which is right why you really need a broadband connection.
Audio's big. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Okay.
What kind of formats do you guys provide your books in?
You mean now?
Yeah.
Just hard copy, Braille, web Braille, and audio cassette.
Okay, what's web Braille?
web Braille is Braille in an electronic format that can be downloaded to a Braille note device or an embosser that can produce the printed Braille.
Okay.
And all the magazines, all the books. And several hundred and growing music scores. So. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Yes, please. Yes.
On that thing, on that block, you had some bumps on the one side of what's the bumps for?
Just as an indication, so you know which
is
way to insert the cartridge.
Oh, I see.
Whether or not that'll be the final indicator, but there'll be some way it'll be obvious.
This is a mock-up. I would suggest to you that it'll be very close to what the final will look like, but it's not exactly the final. Sides are slanted in, but it's going to be made so it will only go in one way, and there'll be an indication for you to know which is up and which is down.
Has there been any ideas of being able to handle these things automatically into some type of system where you can just automatically drop these things in the bins, automated by means of automation?
Well, it's in the manufacture of the product. In other words, the at the studio or the manufacturing plant, there are work is afoot as we speak to develop automatic loading. Is that what you're talking about?
I mean, being able to take this unit and be able to, as these come in, they just kind of as they come in back to the library, you just put them into a thing, and the thing just sends them back to where they're supposed to be stored. So there's some people aren't required to.
There'll still be a mailing container that the cartridges go in.
Oh, I see.
Because they can't go in the mail
the way they are.
Cartridges.
But definitely, how these cartridges interface with the libraries, how they interface with duplication equipment, that's all going into the design of the cartridge, which is why we may still see some changes from this shape before we're done.
We're also in the process of conducting a distribution study to see the best way to distribute these materials to the libraries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in process even as we speak.
Is there some plans that in the future to maybe have a version of this thing where your individual client could program the stuff off the web? In other words, they could have a few of these things and they could program them themselves off their
web. When you say program, then you can download them
right
off the web. And you can
I answered a question earlier. We think that third-party vendors, after we come out with the machine, make available writable cartridges so that you can indeed download and write to them. And then from other sources, not necessarily NLS, you can get books from other RFID, for example,
is this a gigabyte flash memory, or is this a...
Well, at the moment we're looking at 256 megabytes for cost reasons. As memory becomes cheaper, probably the size of the cartridge will go up eventually.
A few years,
you won't be able to get 256 megabyte cartridges, so it's a trade-off between cost and storage capability.
Yes, miss.
I'm Patricia Tuck from Florida, and I have a very important question. I'm an avid reader of the library services, and before I got the induction loop, I really had difficulty reading. I have two cochlear implants, and there are a lot of people that are getting cochlear implants now, or that either have in-the-ear hearing aids. Now, what I would like, and I've talked with the director in Florida, is if you can appropriate some funds for induction loops for the deaf, blind, hearing impaired. Because I don't know what type of service do you offer for this group.
The only thing that we have is an amplification device.
For headphones.
Did you put on your pillow?
No, headphones.
Oh, that's not,
I understand that. You asked what we have, and that's what we have.
This is what I'm trying to get them.
I understand.
I'm trying to get y'all to appropriate some funds or to get some funds to offer this to deaf, blind individuals, to hearing impaired deaf, blind individuals.
I think your suggestion is a good one, and we've heard it before, and we are in the concept of building the new device, talking about the various
accessories
that will go with it, and that is one of the accessories that's being contemplated.
Yeah, you just put it over your head. You know what an induction loop is, don't you?
Yes.
You just put it over your head and plug it into the recorder.
Right.
And I do that every night. And without it, you can't put anything in your ear if you've got the cochlear implant or if you have hearing aids in your ear. And if you try to put earphones on with a cochlear implant, they don't fit over it well. And with hearing aids, they stick out, kind of. They're not, it's not real good.
No, I understand.
And you might need, you might require a doctor's statement.
As we do with the amplification device.
Yeah, that's
also.
Fine.
Yeah.
But amplification, I don't think.
No, I understand. We agree with you. And it will be somewhat after 2008, but not too long after 2008.
But it won't be before then?
I don't think so.
Okay. I've asked the library services in Florida. And I've talked with the director about that.
I actually received an email, and they may be purchasing some with their own funds to make them available.
In Florida?
In Florida.
I talked to the director, and she liked the suggestion, too.
Right. No, that's the assistant director. That's Meredith Beckhart.
That's who I talked with.
Right. And then I talked with the director there.
Uh-huh.
Who indicated that they probably had some donation money that they would be happy to use to provide some.
A wonderful, wonderful.
Okay.
So there you are in Florida, but for the national program, not immediate.
Right. I'm saying when you do on a national level, get that's what we need.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one of these things. I bought it with my own money from the American Printing House.
Right.
And I have it around my neck now, and particularly with the Federation transmitter, it makes listening to the convention and focusing in a lot easier.
Thank you. Yes.
But I think for the convention, you need the transmitter. But if you're listening to the tapes, you don't. You just plug it into the tape, and it works wonderfully.
Yes, I do that sometimes when I'm traveling. By Greyhound bus, plug it in and turn on the tape, and away I go.
I do that when I'm on the treadmill. Mm-hmm. I do an hour on the treadmill, and away I go. I put the tape recorder right up there, plug it in, and go.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you're looking into that, because I think the deafblind community has been under-addressed by all involved many years.
You're absolutely right.
Thank you.
This is J.D. from Florida again, and my next question has to do with another area. It has to do with the funding for your program federally and in the states, because it is a cooperative venture.
That's correct.
The funding streams. And I wonder, are there states where their individual state programs are in jeopardy at this point? Because I know all states...
Well, jeopardy is a hard word. There are states where for various reasons, funding has become more difficult. Was it Minnesota?
Minnesota is currently closed.
The whole state of Minnesota is closed down, and therefore the regional library would be...
And there are other states that because of the financial difficulty in the state, statewide, it's affecting library services to the blind and handicapped, as well as regular library services.
We haven't had any cases where the library service for the blind has been specifically targeted for demolition or anything of that sort. As far as our funding goes for the federal government, we are in reasonable shape.
Good to hear.
Yes, it is good.
That's reassuring.
But it's primarily through the... I think that the program is appreciated by the Congress, and I think that the NFB as well as the other organizations support the lobbying effort, and it's through use and everybody's good things together makes it a synergistic effort. It's good.
I think as a portion of the population, the blind and disabled use our specific library services hugely compared to the general population.
Absolutely. 34 or 35 books a year average circulation to the blind population. It's like one book, one newspaper issue, one magazine issue for the sighted population.
Wow.
Kind of crazy. It's very askew. Any other questions?
Yes, sir. One more. About song care. Have you ever considered, now there are a lot of books that have gone out of print, and you can't get them to do necessarily new recordings, but a lot of times some of the copies, if they were played on such machines as a laser turntable or something, the old 33s, not only would you be resurrecting some of the readers, really good ones who are long since past ever reading a book again, is there any way that you might look into
we're doing that
turntable and then record it and take out the...
We're doing that as we speak. There's a young fellow at work, his name is Ed Pitts, who works in the production control section, who has a task of going back to the 78s and up through the 33s and pulling out the more significant items and seeing what the quality of the recording is, and if they are, I'm going to say duplicable, I don't know if that's the word, reproducible or whatever, and that's in process as we speak.
Let me say, don't get your hopes way up.
Oh, I know.
Because some of the systems you've heard about, where they have a laser turntable and they, the guys from University of California, they're getting 6 gigabytes of data for 1 second of audio. It has to be analyzed and processed and all of the dirt removed from that data.
Yeah,
we did not keep an archival copy of anything, really, to speak of the 33s and the 16s. We were the regional library for a big chunk of the country, and everything we have and everything that most other people have has been out to users, and especially side one of the record really got scratched up often. And
that's right.
It's a problem. I don't expect that we'll be able to resurrect a lot of that stuff, because somebody needs to operate a computer, adjust some levels, adjust some software. If you remove enough noise, it sounds like a digital cellular telephone.
Yeah.
If you keep enough noise in, it may be good, except for an occasional pop.
Yeah.
What do you do with this stuff? Who makes the decisions? Who runs the equipment? Who gets paid to do the work? Other libraries, including the Library of Congress, are also working on this problem. And they've had to borrow tape machines from us to resurrect
open reel material from old broadcasts now that we're no longer using those tape machines. So there's a lot of work to be done in this area, and it's not going to happen fast.
Anyone else?
Yes, speaking of tape machines, I've heard that there's some tapes where the tape is stored vertically. The tape will, because of the acetate, some you have to remove, run the reels every so often, otherwise you have the tape sag. Do you have problems with your tape libraries in that respect at all?
I don't think we have much trouble with that. We have some trouble with... We converted some stuff to VHS cassette digital material that we did back in 1986, 87. I think we're finding that that material, because it was not wound back and forth every year, will probably not turn out to be usable, probably. But one of the things that does happen with open reel tape is some batches of material, the oxide was not properly prepared, and so it sheds all over the place, and you have to bake the reel of tape at a certain temperature for a couple hours, and then you get one play off that tape, and you throw it away. Some tapes were subject to that. Some other tapes that are even older are just fine. So,
curious.
Anyone else?
Yes. Quality of tape.
Yes. Yeah.
Is there a membership fee?
Wait, no, what state are you in, sir?
What?
What state do you live in?
Montana.
No, you contacted the...
Right, Christy Briggs is the regional librarian in Montana, and she's in the capital, Helena.
Right. And we have application forms in the booth.
Absolutely. Stop by the booth. We're booth number 39.
And you'll get a cassette machine, you'll get a registration in the program, you'll be able to receive bi-monthly catalogs.
And she can sign up.
And there's no cost to you.
Yeah, well, I'm already registered. I just graduated from high school, and I'm trying to think, is there a fee to
not,
be a member of it?
Not for MLS. There's never been a fee, and there never
will be a fee. No. There is a fee for recording for the blind and visually blind
dyslexic.
And dyslexic.
And for Bookshare.
And for Bookshare, but not for the Library of Congress, no.
Bookshare is
just... Other questions? Yes.
When are you going to put out the new reader, the new book?
2008,
okay.
And along with that, speaking of tapes, you said that, mentioned that people are not going to want to give up their
They don't have to give up their machine.
And they won't have to. And so does that also mean you're going to continue to have the set?
For a short period of time.
Available
for a short period of time, the books will be put out in two formats.
Right.
Because obviously we won't have enough machines.
But the catalog for existing years, they'll still be available.
They will be available in perpetuity, as they say.
But we will not, we don't have a plan to convert everything that we have on cassette to digital either. No.
So
that's another reason for it.
Anything else?
How long do you expect cassette tapes to be available?
Until forever.
You don't think that they'll disappear like vinyl did?
Yeah, absolutely. But forever is not very long for me. Longer for you.
I happen to know someone who used to work in that industry.
Right. Anything else?
So the machine, the cassette players that we have now, are y'all upgrading them to new versions?
There'll be there will be no new cassette machine. There'll be a new digital machine which will come out in 2008. The cassette machine that you have now, or a replacement for it, will be available into the future also. We're making a big buy in spare parts, and we're going to maintain that cassette capability for some years ahead.
The last cassette machine to be manufactured in about a year or so.
But we build them at 50,000 units a pop.
50,000.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Yes.
I just wanted to thank you all for coming today. I really appreciate your clear information and your...
Go ahead, more.
I can't... It's hard for me to put into words how much the material... materials that you offer have added to my life and helped me both professionally and personally, and my life would be so different without the variety and number of books that are available. And I'm so pleased you're moving into the new millennium with such vim and vigor.
Let me tell you something. Okay. I could say the same thing in the reverse. You know how the kids say, and to you or whatever, my whole life changed the day that Quincy Mumford, who was the librarian of Congress, said, Kurt, you're going out to Taylor Street. Bob Bray is ill and he's passing away. You know, he's died. And you're going out there and run the program. And I said, what the hell is this? Do I want to go out and run a program for blind people? Do I want to go out? He's in a ghetto situation and so forth. I have never had a better 35 years. As a librarian, it's fantastic. People complain about the terrible things we do. People praise us for the good things we do. Every day is a new excitement, and you don't even want to believe. I couldn't even begin to tell you about Michael Katzman's laughing. He's been here for 3 months, and he's beginning to face it. But it's been a he didn't know what he was getting into when he got here. But it's also been a wonderful thing in that way. And you don't want to get hokey about it, because we find that the people come in and say, oh, I want to help the blind community, they go away very soon. But it's a wonderful experience. It is I love audiobooks myself, and they just have brought a whole new dimension to my life. So I really have appreciated being working for, and not only that, they pay you for it, you know, which is
it's always nice.
You can't beat that.
That's right.
And JD, I like the slogan on your webpage or on your email messages. I may have to start using it.
What's that?
Helping the light dependent to see.
Nothing to do with blindness, but my favorite author is Arthur Ransom, and if you don't believe that, we have this whole set of children's stories, the 12 in there, but his thing is, grab a chance and you won't be sorry for it might have been. Now think about that. That is fantastic. And what we're doing with this digital technology, with this flash, is grabbing a chance.
Right.
Now, as I said, whether we're right or whether we're almost right or whether I have to beat a hasty retreat, that's something else, but it's grab a chance and you won't be sorry for it might have been. Yes.
Now, you got to stop sometime. I mean, you can't go on a whole
thing. The catalogs that y'all have out now.
What?
That y'all publish now. The catalogs?
Yeah.
The print catalogs?
Yeah.
If, of course, in the future, are y'all going to take and put them in Braille, too?
The Braille catalog, the Braille book review is available in Braille and in print. The audio catalog, the talking book topics is available in print and in audio. We don't put talking book topics in Braille, and we probably won't. There are 700,000, I mean, this is a rough figure, 700,000 audio users. There are about 25,000 Braille users. And you can see that right there.
It would be too big of a Braille publication to. Our catalog has never existed in Braille. Maybe 30 years ago it did, but it's way too big to ever do it in Braille. If you want to know what we have, you need to go online on our webpage, and it's a pretty accessible webpage. It's a lot better than a lot of the stuff out there. And or have your library help you find stuff.
Okay.
We just can't do it in Braille. It would be
financially
100 volumes or more.
But financially it's not possible either. Yes.
Can you get talking book topics in online?
Yes.
Okay. Is there
go to the website.
Okay, great. Is there some way I can turn off my subscription to talking book topics?
Just tell your librarian.
Call your librarian.
Okay.
And if you got any luck, it will stop. and if you don't have any luck, they'll be bugging me, and I'll try to make it stop.
It takes 6 to 8 weeks for it to be processed. So, be patient. And after 2 months, call your library again.
And after 3 months, call her.
What's online of Talking About Topics is a text version, audio version.
That's what I mean.
A text version, yeah.
Anyone else? Yes.
I can't help but ask one more question.
I'm holding you to that.
Thank you.
I understand that some of the commercial titles are now going to be available through...
You just happen to be sitting in a row in front of the gentleman who's making that possible for us. Rudy, would you like to comment to that? Rudy Savage of Talking Book Publishers, Denver, Colorado, who's brought to the program many, many innovations. He's... Go ahead.
One of the real neat part of this is that it'll happen... It's starting to happen now in August, I think. There are a number of books that will be recording, and NLS will be releasing that are commercial books, but they'll be simultaneous with the print, so that for the same day they go to the bookstore, they'll go to, they'll be recorded, they will have been recorded, and they'll go out to the NLS people.
Oh, cool. Isn't that neat?
We're starting in a small, how many titles?
We're doing 70 this year.
Right.
Well,
he has big hopes for next year. It depends on the budget. He's a contractor, so we can't get into that. But we're starting with a 70 title effort this year, and it'll increase in the years ahead.
Are those titles going to, most of the audio books that are commercially available are abridged?
No, these will be cover to cover, word for word, just like ours. We don't produce any abridged.
Then I'm happier.
I noticed that, like, on Torpedo Junction, it appeared to be a copy that was a commercial copy that they allowed you somehow or other.
We've been doing it for several years.
And making it available.
We started out with that. John Bryant started out with a very small thing, and now we're expanding that.
That was really cool.
Of course, there was the time that we found that Chapter 10 was missing from what we got.
Oh, no, not the Torpedo Junction.
No, but some book or other.
Well, hey, Lloyd, we've done that ourselves.
Right.
Don't talk about
that. Yeah.
Yes, miss.
I'm in no way holding you responsible fully.
Well, thank God. For what?
I'm in no way holding you responsible for the actions of the regional librarians.
What state are you from?
New York.
Upstate
area, two counties merged.
Oh, Long Island?
Yes.
Yeah.
And the level of service has almost become non-existent. Once upon a time, I could fill out the form and say these are the kinds of books I want. I need one, mail one back, and we come. Or I could get on the phone and talk to somebody and say, you know, I'd like to read a book. This is the kind of stuff I want. These are the kinds of authors I like. You can't do that anymore.
Well, you're supposed to be able to, and I'm sorry, actually.
And you should. Your sub-regional librarian from Long Island is actually blind. She is blind.
Deborah is the works for NLS, and she's one of our national consultants.
New York does not happen to be my territory. It's my husband's territory.
They've divided the country up between
them. You see, we not only promote good reading, we promote a close relationship with... as you know, the sub-regional librarian died a few years ago.
Judy Clauber.
And Julie ran a very fine library. The library service varies from area to area, but talking to Debbie offline, we can hopefully put some...
Moment, I didn't call Debbie, I
mean, I'm not trying to cut you off, but I'm going to say, talk to Deborah.
I'll talk to you later. Okay, after we're through here, stay, and I'll be right there to take your name and try to work out things. Okay? See if I can't run into...
You might be amused at this. I don't know. I'm going to take a risk. You see, you didn't hold me responsible, so I'll tell you a story about Long Island. There were books that were disappearing, and we couldn't find the books. And it was in the wintertime. And they'd send a woman a book, and she'd say she never got the book. Never got the book. What she was doing was digging holes in the snow and burying books in the snow. What she didn't anticipate was the spring thaw. And when the spring thaw came, her whole backyard was filled with hundreds of talking books that we found. Now, I'm not saying that your librarian is taking retaliation for that. I think you're very concerned. That's just one of the vagaries of life to come into the service of the blind and physically handicapped. I don't know. You want another story? You don't want another story. But I'm going to tell you anyway. There was a fellow in the very nice chap actually in Detroit who claimed that he was a Native American. He said he was the chief of the Jollywocks, land of the Capuche. And I used to be, I had the same job, but I had a different title. So he used to write me letters. The chief of the Jollywocks, land of the Capuche, sends greetings to the chief of the Library Service for the Blind. And I would return, I'd respond to him in kind. He then decided he didn't like dirty books. Now, the definition of dirty books, I've seen books, but what he started to do was boil them and lie.
Oh.
And then I had to tell him, stop that. And he said he was going to come to D.C. and take a shot at me. Then I said, well, I wasn't too good, but I figured he couldn't hit me. But he then sent a box, and this box came, and I had a fellow who worked for us at that time, Eddie Jewell. Eddie Jewell opened the box, and when Eddie looked into the box, he yelled out, voodoo, voodoo, I'll never get over this as long as I live. And he throws the box out of the air. And I said, oh, I didn't say holy macaroni, you can imagine what I said, holy. And out of this box came strips of barbed wire that were about 12 inches long. 100 of them. I have half a dozen around my office right now. And I don't know why he sent me this barbed wire, but the poor fellow passed away, and part of my life just went out the door. I've never been the same since. Anyway, I think that's a way we can end. if you don't mind, we're going to ask these questions because that fellow from Florida just won't stop asking questions. Now, if anybody wants to talk technically to Michael and Lloyd, please do. Deborah's here.
I have
talk
to speak to the man from West Virginia to get
and the young lady from New York.
And yes.
And thank you. And for Mr. McKeever, Mr. Katzman, if that's his name, is waiting for you.
Okay,
thank you. Bye bye.
And you're in Charleston. Okay, so.
Well, we haven't started.
Okay, so.